Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Maybe when you write a national bestseller, you'll get your own sports show. Until then, this is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
John Gibbons, the field manager of your Toronto Blue Jays, will join us at 11:15 ahead from his appearance today at the State of the Franchise, or his appearance, I should say, tonight at the State of the Franchise at the Air Canada Centre. John Gibbons, Paul Beeston, Alex Anthopoulos will address season's ticket holders. John Gibbons will join us at 11:15. Renaud Lavoir, a regular Thursday insider from TVS Sports, he'll be along at 11:40. We'll take a look around the NHL, including this idiotic decision. And look, I love Paul Maurice as much as an ex guy. I've said often that he's, you know, I've had the opportunity to do a little radio with him. I've had the opportunity to deal with him as a reporter and coach. And I have a lot of time for Paul Maurice, but I'm sorry. Scratching a guy because he wore a tracksuit to the game. I understand that there's a lot of people out there that, you know, like Don Cherry, think expect their hockey players to be dressed up and wear suits and ties all the time. I don't really care what you wear. Score some goals. I mean, seriously, there's a lot of hockey players who dress really nicely. Joffrey Lupul dresses nicely. Jonathan Bernier is a model, for God's sake. How are they doing on the ice so far? Anyhow, we'll talk to Renaud Lavoie about that. That's a hockey thing, I realize. You got to wear a suit and tie, but it's... Anyhow, Paul Jones is a Raptors radio analyst in Sportsnet 590. The Fan, you can follow him on Twitter at Paul_Jones. The Raptors in their second straight game, 109-93 to the Brooklyn Nets last night. Now they start an eight-game stretch against winning teams, starting with the Clippers tomorrow night at the ACC, and then Sunday at the ACC, the San Antonio Spurs come into town. I'm getting tired, Paul, of telling everybody not to panic. I'm still doing it, but I'm getting tired of telling everybody not to panic. Please help me out here.
Welcome to the bandwagon, Jeff. The casual fans that jump on board and they live and die on every game, every possession. I mean, it's the sky is falling mentality and rhetoric is just a killer. It's a long season. There's a long haul. They've lost two straight after winning six in a row. It's not great, but you know, they're still on the positive end right now. That was the first loss in the division to with the exception of Paul Pierce, a pretty much a playoff team from last year that got Darren Williams back.
Mm-hmm.
The sky is not falling, and people, especially the newbies, the neophytes, need to understand that now. The fact that they have lost two games and maybe the way they've lost and lacking the energy at times, that would be concerning. But, I saw a different half from Kyle Lowry in the first half as opposed to what we saw for an entire game against Milwaukee. So, look, they're going through a rough stretch right now. It's a tough time period. I think you come out after the All-Star game, and you're right. You've got a difficult schedule going forward. I mean, you look at the 4 and 5 nights right after the All-Star game, it's going to be tough. And then you come home for Golden State, difficult stretch, but you're going to have to get through it. And that's why you built up all those wins earlier in the season to have a little bit of a buffer.
Joined by Paul Jones on The Jeff Blair Show. The Raps will play the LA Clippers. That's Blake Griffin, Chris Paul and company tomorrow night. We've got it live at 7 p.m. on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Paul and Eric Smith will have the call. The game TV coverage begins at 6:30 in Sportsnet 1. The tip-off will be just after 7. Matt Devlin and Leo Routens will be handling the duties of that game. This is the fourth consecutive game that the Brooklyn Nets have scored 100 points. They are, as you say, they're under Lionel Hollins, they're getting it back together. There's a lot of issues around that team. There's age, there's salary cap issues, there's ownership issues and everything. But I guess my concern, Paul, if I have one, is you're right. The energy, two nights in a row, the energy, for whatever reason, has come and gone. I'm smart enough, and I've seen enough sports to know that guys are going to go through shooting slumps. Hitters are going to go through hitting slumps. Phil Kessel is going to go through goal-scoring slumps. What can you see in Lou Williams's game, or perhaps this is a bit less of an issue, Kyle Lowry's game, that suggests to you, though, that it will come back together? Is it simply a matter of these guys have a track record? I mean, Lou Williams is a former Sixth Man of the Year, or I'm sorry, runner-up for Sixth Man of the Year. He's got a track record. He's not going to miss three-pointers for the rest of his career. It's just not going to happen. Is that something you hang on to as an analyst?
Sure. The guy's proven, and what do they always say? One of the best measures of future performance is looking at past performances. And Lou Williams is that kind of player, and he may go through a stretch where, the ball isn't going in, but it's not like he's going to stop shooting. They need his scoring. He had a couple of really good looks last night. Some of those things were halfway down and popped back up. So you don't have to worry about, how it impacts a guy like Lou Williams. I'm sure there'll be extra shots. There'll be extra time in the gym. There'll be a little earlier work on game day. And you stick to routine, and that's what gets you through. Same with Kyle Lowry. I think he's not going to say it. He's not going to give anybody an edge. I think he's a little tired right now. Boy, he really played hard in those 21 games when DeMar was out. I looked at his numbers yesterday, and they were up. His assists were almost 9 a game. He's averaging 7 for the year. His scoring was up around 21, 22 points a game. He's only averaging about 19, 18 plus, 19 for the year. Everything went up. And with that, Kyle supplied the requisite energy that the team needed as its leader. So you've got to believe that there's going to be a little bit of a market correction, a little bit of a downturn after expending that much energy. So, again, it's not great to see it, but you have to believe that they're going to get through it.
Paul Jones in conversation with us on the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. What are we looking at insofar as Dwayne Casey's options with his lineup go? I think there's a sense now that there's, I don't know if I'd use the word, some dissatisfaction about having Greivis Vasquez out there alongside Kyle Lowry, but people are starting to wonder more about, do you get Terrence Ross back in? What do you do when James Johnson comes back? I mean, Paul, I like going with Greivis Vasquez just because I think you had to give Kyle Lowry, and you may still have to give Kyle Lowry a little bit of time off the ball, because I keep telling people he did an awful lot of heavy lifting, even with DeMar in the lineup at the start of the year. A lot of it was on Kyle, and I understand he's your go-to guy. He's your alpha dog. He's your point guard. I get all that, but man, you gotta manage his workload a little bit.
Yeah, his minutes are, he's up in the top 20 or 25, I believe, in minutes. But with Greivis on the floor, going into Monday's game against Milwaukee, they were 7-1 with Greivis as a starter. And Dwayne Casey commented that last year, that was one of their most efficient and effective lineups with the two decision makers, the two point guards on the floor. So I don't think Dwayne's going to be one to hastily make a change, on a whim or just spontaneously. He will make sure that, whatever lineup he puts out there, it's been well thought through. Terrence Ross seems to be settling in quite nicely in his role off the bench. Mm-hmm. And he had, I think it was a season high 23 last night. And after the first shot that he didn't knock down, he became very focused and knocked down a bunch of shots after that. Maybe he's settling into his role. James Johnson, when he comes back, you could have used him last night against Joe Johnson. You could have used him, maybe against the Jarrett Jack. They just have to wait till he gets healthy. I still think this team is in a good place. I still think they've got, that buffer, that cushion. And, there's been a lot of talk about, JV in the fourth quarter. And, I'm kind of silently laughing inside. This goes back to last year. It goes back to one of the games last year where they were playing the Charlotte, at that time, Bobcats. And the Bobcats were treating Jonas the way people treated Shaq back in the 90s. You want to get something, put him in a pick and roll. Because his coverage is different from a Patterson's coverage, an Amir Johnson's coverage, the opponents were able to get what they want, and they just kept setting the screen lower and lower, and they turned the corner, and the 21-foot jumper at the top of the lane turned into an 18-foot jumper just off the free throw line, and then they kept setting the screen low enough that the guy turned the corner and he'd be in the paint when he came off the screen. And Dwayne Casey has to do something about that, and as he said, he's not dominant enough yet at the other end to keep him on the floor. So, you know, they stretch the floor. They have Jonas running out there. It's not ideal. So it's not always a matter of, well, I'll make them match me, because sometimes making them match me hurts me at the other end. So I think Dwayne Casey will work through that. You know, we saw Jonas with some fourth quarter minutes last night. I think he's going to work his way through that and find the right matchup. The NBA is a league of matchups.
Mm-hmm.
It's a league of matchups. I mean, in college, you run plays to get kid an open shot. Then as a coach, you better hope that kid who just started shaving at 18 can make the shot so you keep your job. In the NBA, you look at the matchup and you go, there's our advantage. Give that guy the ball. And so Dwayne Casey hasn't gone stupid all of a sudden. He'll figure that out, and he'll use Jonas when the matchups are right.
Yeah, and, you know, I addressed the issue on Sportsnet.ca about Jonas Valanciunas, and, you know, I endeavored to point out as well, as you said, this is a league of matchups. Now, it's entirely possible that the Raptors may get a first round matchup where Jonas could be the guy that tips the balance in their favor. It's also possible they get a first round matchup where they're going to have to go small an awful lot to take advantage, not to take advantage of the team, but just go small an awful lot to force the other team's hand. And one of the things I've seen recently, and, you know, maybe it's because I'm kind of a nutcase when it comes to basketball, and I always write down combinations. At some point in the game, I scribble the five numbers that are on the floor. I just write them down just for whatever reason. I don't know what it is. But you look at some of the combinations Dwayne Casey's had out there in the last 2 weeks. I've been making the point that some of them are pretty creative, and you can see him throwing them out there during the playoffs.
Yeah, you can. And like I said, it depends on the matchup and who he has on the floor and who he needs at what time. So, look, the Raptors are a team now that I feel, Jeff, are going to be judged on what happens between April and June, not necessarily the regular season. They're going to be in the playoffs. They need a good seed, but they've got to win the first-round series. And I just think that all of this, I wouldn't say it's experimentation, but there's some vision with what's coming and what's, you know, happening down the road as to what Dwayne Casey's doing right now.
We're in conversation with Paul Jones, Raptors radio analyst on the Jeff Blair Show. So these next eight games coming up, I used the phrase heavy lifting when I was talking about Kyle Lowry. This is really heavy lifting coming up. The Clippers and San Antonio Spurs in 72 hours. What is going to be the key for the Raptors to kind of keep it together during this eight game stretch? Now, I'm not predicting they're going to go 1-7 or 2-6 or anything like that, but when I say keep it together, what's going to be the key to 4-4, maybe 5-3?
Well, first of all, Jeff, they're going to have to play hard. You know, they're, like you said, you look at the opponents, Clippers, San Antonio, Washington, and then 4-5 nights on the back end with Atlanta, Houston, and then New Orleans, Dallas. And oh, by the way, you come home two nights later for Golden State. They're going to have to play hard. I think offensively, they're really going to have to share the ball and be mindful of their shot selection and not turn it over on the offensive end. And then defensively, just get after it. Five guys on a string, rotating, making sure you're trying to contain the ball. Got a rebound. And again, Dwayne Casey has to watch the matchup. So it's a tough stretch, and it's not a great time to be going into this tough stretch, but the schedule is what it is. I just think those are key points if they're gonna come through this thing while relatively unscathed.
Paul, it was great to talk to you this morning. Thanks so much.
Okay, Jeff.
It's Paul Jones. He is our Raptors radio analyst on Sportsnet 590 Fan. Oh, it gets difficult from this point on, folks. Eight games against winning teams, starting with the LA Clippers tomorrow night at the Air Canada Center. Blake Griffin, Chris Paul, the Clippers, tomorrow night. We'll have the game on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Paul Jones, whom you just heard from, and Eric Smith will have the call of the game on television, on the TV side. The coverage will start at 6:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 1, followed by tip-off just after 7. Of course, Matt Devlin and Leo Routens will have the call of the game. And then Sunday night, the San Antonio Spurs come into town. So in a 72-hour period, you're looking at the LA Clippers and the San Antonio Spurs. And look, Paul was right. I'm unusually optimistic about this team. And I remain unusually optimistic about the Raptors. I have a lot of faith in Masai Ujiri and Dwayne Casey. A lot of faith in the players in this team. And I guess what I just like to remind Raptors fans is Kyle Lowry is not Dion Phaneuf. DeMar DeRozan is not Phil Kessel. Try not to transpose your concerns about the Leafs onto the Raptors. Have a little more faith in that. The Raptors lost 109-93 to the Nets last night. And the Nets, of course, the team that eliminated the Raptors in the playoffs last year. Still have to like where the Raptors are. I think, and on Twitter, a couple of people pointed out, and valid points and fair play to them, that the Raptors were actually creating a few bad habits. This is Paul Dawkins. The Raptors won while building bad habits, the same habits that are contributing to losses. There's no quick fix. Now, I know Paul's been a critic of some of the things the Raptors have done and the way Dwayne Casey is coached. But, I mean, he's been a measured critic. He isn't, you know, he's not one of those fire-breathing guys that's coming out and ripping things. But he's had some concerns about the way the Raptors have done things. And I get that concern. I get that concern. But at this point, I have enough faith in the Raptors and the players and the coaching staff that they'll get this figured out. I will say this, too. I've covered a lot of baseball teams where you get to a certain point in the season, you talk to the manager and you say, what do you guys need to make it work right now? And he'll say, you know what we really need? We really need the All-Star break. I mean, we need to get away from it for a couple of days. We need guys to sleep in, to not have to come down to the gym, do some shopping, go out for lunch with their wife, go for dinner with their wife, maybe get a quick getaway to New York or somewhere. We need that. We need the All-Star break to get us back on track. And it's entirely possible that this may be where the Raptors are right now. It is the state of the franchise tonight at the Rogers Center. Paul Beeston, who is president and CEO of the Blue Jays for another year, Alex Anthopoulos, who is general manager, will address the assembled season's ticket holders. It's usually about 5,000 people that come out to this thing, and they get a chance to ask questions of those two men and also our next guest, the field manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, John Gibbons. And we're very pleased that John Gibbons joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. John, thanks for doing this. I'm really happy we were able to get some cold weather for you here.
JB, man, it's always good to talk to you. It's, you know, it's kind of nice stepping off that airplane. It's a little warmer down where I'm living, but it's just kind of refreshing stepping off that plane. And, it's good to be back in town. You know, it's been a while.
Yeah, you call it refreshing. I call it. Well, we've had this discussion. You know that I'm a big fan of global warming. You do know that. I mean, I know we don't agree in a lot of things politically, but if we can do something to make the entire world 85 degrees and sunny 365 days of the year, I'm down with that. I'd have no problem with that.
Hey, but I thought we agreed on most things. That's not true?
Yeah, we know politics. I don't know. I'm looking forward to Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton going at it. That'll make for some fun. Not going at it, but you know what I mean. I'm looking forward to them. Anyhow, we'll be able to have some discussions about that. Let's talk a little baseball. Who's your closer?
Good question. No, you know what? I think Jeff, I think I spoke with you probably, it was probably a couple months ago, when we were talking about, you know, how the pitching staff was kind of stacking up. And, you know, at the time, you know, I was a big proponent of getting Sanchez in the rotation, as are most guys, want to see what he can do. But he was always kind of the wild card. He could go either way. And I mean, if you look at it right now, he may be a guy that ends up in the pen, him being our closer.
Mm-hmm.
There's still some things that could happen. I mean, it's getting to that point. You know, spring training is just a couple weeks away. But, it's one thing. I mean, we saw enough of him last year to know that he could do it probably do it pretty damn good, you know, especially for a young kid. And, but, you know, everybody's kind of – everybody, I think, wants to see a guy with – the sky could be the limit on this kid too in the rotation. But you know, he may best fit our team this year coming out of the bullpen. So that's still up in the air a little bit.
One of your other internal candidates, it's a name that's come up a lot lately, is Brett Cecil.
Right.
You know, I kind of like Brett in the role he's in right now. It's just me talking. I like Brett in the role he's in. I'm certainly not the manager of the team. Could you see him being a candidate for the job as well?
Yeah, Jeff, he could be. I mean, you could, you know, if Sanchez does end up down there, you know, it could be one of those situations where you could use either one of them, depending on, you know, how a lineup stacks up going into the end of the seventh inning, eighth and ninth inning, that kind of thing. And, you know, hopefully you're in enough situations where you need your closer a lot. And if one guy needs a break, the other guy could do it. Yeah, I agree with you. I think Cecil could, you know, definitely do that job as well. You know, I think he's closed five games out for us last mm-hmm. year, you know, as did Loop. Loop got him a couple himself. So, you know, we do have some options down there, you know, but it's time for some younger guys that have kind of been up and down, guys like Jenkins, or guys like Rasmussen, those guys that really take a step forward. Even a guy like Drabek, maybe it's time for Drabek. You know, here it is, here's that shot, do something with it. So there'll be some good competition down in spring training, especially the way things stack up right at this moment.
In conversation with John Gibbons, manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, on the Jeff Blair Show. How do you? And again, I'm just going to let's operate under the assumption that you go into spring training and this is the bullpen the way it is. I'm sure Alex will have another arm in there. But how would you set up the competition for the or how competition's not the right word. How would you set up the workload for that closer's job if, in fact, you go in and it's Cecil and Sanchez? Would you give each of them a share of closing games in spring training? Or, you know, I know that the conversation's been about lengthening Sanchez out in spring training. How would you go about doing that?
Well, real quick, before I get into that, you know, another guy that, you know, you don't hear, I mean, people don't talk as much about that. What we're really counting on this year too is Delabar. You know,
yeah.
we need a bounce back year from Delabar. And if he's the old guy or close to the old guy, we're in that much better shape. You
mm-hmm.
know? And I think that'll happen. So, but you know, as far as your question, you know, I think going into spring, you know, we'll start Sanchez out. You know, as if he's going to start. You know, we'll start to build him up a little bit, and then as we get a couple weeks in, we'll kind of see where we're at and see what. You know, if he's going to end up in the bullpen, we can always back him down there. But it's not going to hurt him. He's always been geared to be a starter, you know, in his short professional career. So he's used to that in spring training. And I think it'll really do him I think it'll be good for him, put him out there and let him build up some innings. You know, let him pitch a little bit instead of just taking him into spring training and, you know, throwing him one inning at a time. You know, this way he can keep developing since he's such a young kid. And, you know, I mean, you watched him last year. I mean, he's got such a good fastball that he basically, I mean, 95% of his pitches were probably fastballs last year. So we need him to use all his pitches, you know, his curveball and his changeup. And really the only time for that, if he's going to end up in the pen, is to do it in spring training. So that's kind of the plan there.
In conversation with John Gibbons on the Jeff Blair Show, you've got Russell Martin and Josh Donaldson, two new additions to the team. What does Martin bring to this team? In addition to what he brings on the field, what does he bring to the team in terms of how you might be able to manage the game? Because I've always thought, and I know I think most managers believe that the catcher is kind of the extension of the manager. The catcher is kind of the manager's brains and eyes and ears out in the field. And we know that Russ Martin is a field general in the purest sense. What is that? Having a catcher like that who's so good defensively, what does that do to how you will manage a game?
Well, Jeff, you know, when you got one of the best catchers in the game, I mean, it makes it a lot easier on a manager and a coach's staff. Because like you said, he's out there running the game. That's the ideal situation. You know, when you might have a young, inexperienced catcher out there, you know, I mean, there's a lot of talking, a lot of instructing, that kind of thing. And he really doesn't quite have the feel of the game yet in his pitching staff. Kind of like Russell. Russell's played a while. He's played on winners. He's got a great feel. I mean, that's why he was really, you know, one of our top targets this offseason, and we're lucky to get him. So you basically, you know, you turn it over to him. You know, we still set the stage for a lot of what happens on the field, but he's running it. He knows what's going on with the pitching staff. I'll lean on him, you know, if a guy starts tiring, I'll ask him, you know, maybe does this guy got anything left? And, you know, a guy like Russell, I mean, you put a lot of stock in what he tells you. But he's basically in charge. He knows how to kick these guys. He knows how to motivate them. And bottom line, like I said a second ago, is he's played on winners. I mean and the game is won on the mound. We all know that. But those guys on good pitching staffs always have a good catcher. So we're lucky to have him, that's for sure.
Where do you see him fitting into the lineup? Have you sat down and kind of scribbled out what the batting order would be right now? I mean, we know that you're not going to have Melky Cabrera, who's kind of locked in at the number two spot, and in some ways, maybe one of the most perfect number two hitters you could find for any team because of his swing and his switch hitter and all that. But who do you see hitting second right now if the season were to start? I mean, I would think Reyes would be your leadoff guy and go from there.
Right. Well, I mean, you could the way I'm looking at it today, it would be Russell.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff, he can play that role. I think he'd be an ideal two-hole hitter. He sees a lot of pitches. He gets on base. He uses the whole field. I mean, if Reyes gets on, he's he'll give Reyes a chance to do his thing a little bit. I mean, he's got a good feel of the game. He's got enough pop. You put him in our part two. I think he's going to hit for more power. But he's just a professional hitter. And you can put him anywhere, and he's going to know the role and what it takes in that role. So if the season would start tomorrow, you'd probably see him in that number two. Well, you would definitely see him in that number two spot. But we could tinker with things, see how things look as we get, the midway point in spring training. We put all those guys out there on the field every day together, and we'll have a little better feel of it. But not only you were talking about is what he brings defensively. He's a pretty good all-around catcher, which is rare in the game these days. A lot of times you get these guys that can really hit, and they really struggle behind the plate. And then you get guys that are great catchers, but they can't hit a lick. And
mm-hmm.
We got the combination right there, and that's why we feel so good right now.
What would your plans be for Deonner Navarro right now?
Well, he's going to do a lot of DHing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Dino can hit, and we're talking about Russell, but Dino did a great job for us last year. He really did. He can hit both sides of the plate. It makes it's a nice option to have a switch hitter there. He'd still get some games behind the plate to give, Russ a little breather. And then, of course, Eddie, if that's the case, Eddie would have to play a lot of first base. And,
mm-hmm.
We want to see what Smoke is, too. So, Smoke, we think there's more in there than he's shown the last couple of years. So, and he just needs a change of scenery. So, you can't judge everything. With young guys that are, we talked earlier about competition. There's going to be some good competition in spring training, but you can't base everything on spring training. Guys like Navarro's going to hit. If Smoke has a better spring, it might change our thinking a little bit, maybe give him a little more playing time. But once you get in the season, the guy that's doing the best jobs is going to play more. But it kind of gives us some more options there. But Dean, there's a place for Navarro on this team, and I think after we signed Russell, the thought was, well, Dino would end up somewhere else, I think he was a little bit shocked when we first made that move, but I think now that I think he understands it, and he's got no problem playing here and being part of this team, and in a lot of ways, it's going to keep him stronger and fresher down the road. He's going to play more years because of it.
We had Jerry Howarth in for the previous hour, and as usual, John, he was creating all sorts of issues for you. He suggested, and I have to admit, I kind of helped him along too, that there's a chance that you might see Drew Hutchison as the opening day starter. Now, I know that, we've always talked about the whole thing about the ace, the number one guy. Doesn't matter, one rain out, one snow out, one off day, and it really doesn't matter who the number one guy is. It's all about who's pitching the next day. But do you see Drew ready for that type of year where he could emerge as the guy that gets the ball on opening day?
Well, I think Hutch is going to have a big, big season for us this year. He answered a lot of questions last year, coming back off Tommy John, and really a lot of, limited, experience in the minor leagues. He had a tremendous year. He went start to finish. Made all his starts. We backed him off a couple times to keep him strong, but he showed us a lot. And I think he's still a young kid. I think he's going to take that next step, and he's going to even be better. Whether he's ready for an opening day start, that's just too early to tell that.
Mm-hmm.
Even when you talk about opening day starts, don't forget Stroman.
Mm-hmm.
A guy like Stroke could do that as well. So, we'll decide that who's going to do that. A week or 2 weeks into spring training, when our pitching coach has to set it up to fall in line, but down the road, I could definitely see him doing that. I mean, one thing about Hutch, he's a great competitor. You know, he's got a good arm, he's got all that, but he's like Stroman in Sanchez. I mean, they're young guys, but they're not intimidated one bit, and that goes a long way at this level. And they're all great competitors. So, whether you put a label on a guy, well, he's the opening guy, he's your ace. Well, these guys, that wouldn't faze them, and they're just going to compete wherever you throw.
John, at what point do you have a conversation with Jose Reyes about, hey, we may have to back you off a little bit, whether it's giving you a day off or, I don't know, DHing is a possibility? At what point do you have that conversation with Jose to maybe manage his games a little differently?
Well, JB, I'm gonna talk to him when we get down to spring training, and how many days more days off he's gonna need this year than he's had in the past. We're not sure, but I think it's gonna be smart to do. I mean, he's at that point in his career, and it's gonna help him, and it's gonna help us, because we want to keep him strong and fresh, and for all 6 months, and hopefully beyond that. So, it'll be something I'll talk to him early on. I mean, it's not gonna be a big issue. I'm just gonna basically tell him, you're probably going to need some more days off. And as the season goes on, we'll figure what those days are. Mm-hmm. I'll just kind of monitor him and see how he's moving around and things like that. You got to remember, a guy like Reyes, he does a lot of, pregame stuff to get ready to play. I mean, he's been playing a lot of years, and his body's beat up. And veteran players like that, it's tough for them when they get a day off to gear it up late in the game to come in. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
usually when you try to give him a day off, it's usually you try to give him a complete day off. It's not always ideal. So, but there'll be some resistance there because that's just his mentality, and that's the way he's always been. So, in the end, I think he'll understand that. It's probably gonna do him good now. But I'm saying that, don't expect him to, play 130 games this year.
Right,
he's gonna
play
more than that.
Right,
but. We'll just kind of gauge as we go along and say, hey, he needs a day after day game, after night game, or a tough travel day, one of those kind of things. And I'll just tell him, he'll know a couple days in advance probably. And he'll need it,
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the way it'll have to be.
What's your thinking of second base right now? Is that really up in the air? Or?
Yeah, it is.
I guess Meisser would be.
All the reports on, he's moving great. I mean, he's in better shape now, and for having the surgery, he's moving around pretty damn good. So, we want to see what he is. We expect Ryan Goins to play better. Defensively, he's really good, and we think there's more in there with the bat. You still have Tolleson in one of those situations if you want to run a platoon. Kawasaki's back. The interesting kid that we really want to see is Devin Travis, who we picked up from Detroit for Ghost, who we've gotten rave reviews about. They say this kid can really hit. He's a good, solid defender, real professional team guy. Just what we're looking for. I talked to Jimmy Leland, and he loved him. He said this kid can really hit, and Brad Osmus said the same thing. So we want to see what he is going into spring training. We'll see if he's ready. If he goes out and wins a job, he may be the guy. If he's not ready, then he'll go down to AAA and play. Similar to what we're looking at, Daniel Norris. We'll see what he looks like in spring training. If some reason he comes in there and dominates and wins a job, then he may be in the rotation or in the bullpen himself. But those are the competition spots we're talking about. Like I said earlier, you can't judge everything off spring training. But for young kids like that, a lot of times you do have to guess, but they have to have really, really dominating type springs to give them the jobs.
Yeah, obviously, John, it goes without saying the Jays need. The Jays need a good start this year. Every team needs a good start, but the Jays need a good start this year. Is anything going to be done any differently this year to change some things up or? To put the team in a better position coming out of the gate, or does that really come down to health and on the players?
Well, ideally, I think it would really be beneficial to us to have a good start. 2 years ago, slow start. Last year, we came out okay. I don't think. It's been a while since even since I've been here, the team's really come exploded out of the gates.
Mm-hmm.
Some teams do that. You know, nobody knows why, but I'm not so sure it's necessarily how they prepare in spring training because basically everybody does things the same way. But 2 years ago, our first spring when we brought this whole group together, you know, we had the WBC, and it was kind of, you know, he had guys coming and going. There was a lot of distraction, you know, all the hype and all him. You know, we were ready coming out of spring training, but, you know, maybe the focus wasn't where it needed to be. Last year there was a little more, you know, attention put on that, and I think we're a little more focused and played better coming out of the gates. You know, this year, it's a new look team. You know, I think there's some excitement, and I think it's a better team. You know, and so we'll make sure they're good and ready. But you know, one thing you have to remember too. I mean, we do have a lot of young kids. And you don't have to worry about those guys. You know, but we've got some guys that, you know, I mean, they've been around a while. They take a little bit longer to get going. And, you know, you got to monitor their bodies a little bit, the veteran guys. So, I mean, you still got to pace those guys because you know they're going to be ready coming out of the gate once the season starts. But it's not like you want to throw what you think is the starting nine out there from day one in spring training and run with them. You know, you can't do that. You still got to time it so when the season starts, they're all ready to go. But you still have to be conscious that the veteran guys, you don't push them too much too early, and now they got the nagging injuries and they're set back, and they don't have a chance to get their time and all that kind of crap.
John, it was good to talk to you.
Was that well said, John?
That was well said, especially all the crap stuff at the end. That was good. I'm just kidding. It was good, man. Listen, it's great to talk to you. Thank God baseball, the city needs baseball right now. It needs baseball in a big way. It's good to talk to you. Welcome back to Toronto. We'll see you tonight. And I know you've got, a week left in the off season before you have to get down to Florida. Enjoy it. And
right.
Well,
are you going to be out there tonight?
I don't know. They don't let me out to those things.
Hey, I figured you might be sitting up there on the dugout with us.
No, I would definitely not be sitting up there in the dugout with you. But I'll be there in spirit if I'm not there. We'll be in touch.
All right, Jeff.
Maybe I'll bring Barker along. Who knows?
Yeah, now you're talking.
I know. Take care, man.
Let him ask the questions that I can understand some of them.
We won't need the simultaneous translation. Well, we'll need it for everyone else, but we'll let you go, man. Good talking to you.
All right, see you.
John Gibbons, field manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, state of the franchise tonight at the Rogers Centre. John Gibbons, Alex Anthopoulos, Paul Beeston facing season's ticket holders. You can catch it online on sportsnet.ca. We still got some time. Renaud Lavoie is going to join us. Big stuff happening in Winnipeg with Evander Kane. Don't want to miss this. Renaud Lavoie always brings it, and he's next on the Jeff Blair Show right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, as I said, one thing about Renaud Lavoie, he always gets us thinking, he always gets us talking. He is our Thursday insider from TVS Sports. And, Ren, I'm going to apologize for the lateness, but I was yakking with the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, and I know as a baseball guy, you're okay with that. But you got our attention. This from you on Twitter, the official reason why Evander Kane was a healthy scratch on Tuesday is the tip of the iceberg, according to sources. Interesting day in Winnipeg. There's more to it than just him wearing a tracksuit, isn't there?
Oh, there's no doubt about that, Jeff. There's no doubt about that, because when you think of it, it makes no sense. Yes, according even to the CBA, you have to wear a suit, you know, when it's game day and you're going at the rink or wherever to for a meeting.
That's in the CBA.
Yeah, oh, according to the CBA. You have to, when you're going at the rink, you need to wear a suit. He thought that he was going at the hotel. When you're going at the hotel, you don't need a suit.
Right.
Like, let's say the Montreal Canadiens or the Toronto Maple Leafs, they played two games in two nights. First thing you know, a lot of times, they're going to do that meeting, but at the hotel. So nobody's seeing them.
Sure.
And yes, the players are allowed at that time to wear whatever they want. There's no problem with that. But when you're going at the rink, even if it's for a meeting, you need to wear a suit. You don't need to wear a tie, but you need to wear a suit.
Okay.
That's the bottom line. That's according to the CBA. Some teams are saying, guys, you're not allowed. The Jets, you have to do it. And this is part of the situation right now. But talking to a few coaches around the league this morning, obviously in the same situation, you have a team like the Jets, four losses in a row. Evander Kane was not with the team at the hotel that the night before when they landed after the game in Calgary. In Vancouver, he stayed at home. So he thought that the meeting was at the hotel, and mm-hmm. It was not at the hotel, okay? It was at the rink. Coaches are telling me, listen, it's Evander Kane, four losses in a row. You need a win. The guy is going in the meeting with a tracksuit. Coaches are telling me, Renaud, at one point, look elsewhere. Don't look at him in his suit because you need him to play that game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some coaches are saying, yes, he's breaking, quote-unquote, a rule, but, hey, I need a win tonight. So, well, I'll talk to him, tell him what's going on, why are you in a tracksuit. That's against the rules. But at the bottom line, you need to play the kid.
Mm-hmm.
You need to win. It's not like they were winning four in a row. They lost four in a row. So it's bigger than that. And my understanding is, in a way, teammates are involved. Are everybody in this dressing room are on the same page? I have my doubts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting out there right now, and it's kind of it's tough. It's really tough. The Jets, by saying to him, you're not going to play tonight, in a way, it's like if he's suspended for one game,
right?
With pay, but he's kind of suspended for one game because it was against a team rule. So, and now, obviously, by going in the media after, like Paul Maurice did after the game, just saying it's a coach's decision. Yes, it's a coach's decision, but I think it would have been better to explain to people what happened.
Mm.
Not in details, but to say, hey, there was a meeting this morning. According to the CBA, you need to wear a tracksuit. A suit when you're coming at the rink. You arrive here with a tracksuit. And the bottom line is we decided as a group to tell him you're not allowed to play tonight. This is our rules. This is the league rules, and this is the bottom line. And I think it would have end the story a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But now the more you're talking to people around the league or close to or with the Jets, you're like, oh, my God, okay, this is way bigger than a player not wearing a suit for a team meeting at the rink.
Is there any way, I apologize, I've only got a few, we got a minute here, but is there any way that this gets settled without Evander Kane getting out of Winnipeg in your mind?
Yeah, well, that's, you know what, I remember, Jeff, 2 years ago, I said that I won't be surprised if Evander Kane will be traded, and the Jets fans were all over me. But my understanding is Evander didn't really like to play in Winnipeg, and maybe it's not against Winnipeg, was maybe more with this group in Winnipeg. Was it related at the time with the coach that was there? Maybe. I don't have all the details, but my understanding, it was crystal clear that Evander Kane could be traded 2 years ago. The Jets fans were not happy, and here we are today, and it looks like it could happen. They need to settle that. They need to wash. They need to do something to make sure that everybody's on the same page, but I don't think we're getting close to that right now.
Ren, as always, it was great to talk again. I apologize for the shortness of time. We'll do it again next week.
No problem.
Great stuff as always, my friend. You be well.
Take care.
That's Ren Lvov, TVS Sports. Hockey Central's next. Bill Daly joins the boys. Have a great day, everybody.